Peter Williamson was born in 1950 and grew up in the Sydney area, New South Wales, Australia, after which he moved to Adelaide, where his whole life direction was radically changed. Today he's a husband to Diana and a father to three adult children, and he joins Wilderness Conversations to share his story. Peter, thanks very much for joining Wilderness Conversations.
You're welcome.
I'm interested to know where you grew up and what were some of the significant influences of your early childhood?
I think the fact that my parents split up before I was two is probably a significant thing. So that meant I was farmed around to grandparents and things like that. And this is in Sydney. So we lived at Balmoral, Mossman.
All expensive areas these days, of course.
Yeah. Well, we're only renting there. In fact, the bloke that Mum was renting with, he was a head window dresser at David Jones. And he used to play his My Fair Lady recordings each night on a hi-fi system that my dad had built, because Dad was an early tech person. And that sort of started my love of music.
So what years are we talking here?
Early 50s, 52, 53. Right. I was born in 50. Yeah, and then we fled out to Wanboyne Station out near Ningen.
Gee, that's a big change.
Yeah, that was Mum was trying to avoid Dad. Dad was trying to make it up with her all the time. Dad was a good fella, but Mum had an abusive childhood and she'd only married Dad to get away from her father. And she sort of made that fairly clear, but in fact, you know, she perhaps thought she could half make it work, but she didn't. It's interesting, down the track, she told me that if she'd tried, she realised now she could have made it work, and that was an important lesson for me.
Mm.
I guess maybe I could add to one little bit about my mother saying that she thinks she could have made the marriage to my father work. I went on to be a marriage celebrant, and we counselled a lot of couples before they got married. And to me, that was crucial, because the key to a successful marriage is when both parties commit to work at it. And of course, if they do it with the scriptural guidelines, then they've got 100% chance of success. Some people make it work even without that, but you've got to have commitment. And this dream of, they're not Mr. or Mrs. Right, that's just a load of rubbish. I mean, there are some dodgy people, but by and large, there's lots of Mr. and Mrs. Rights. You've got to commit to work at it, both of you. So that's perhaps what I learned from my own experience and then as a marriage counsellor.
Mm.
Anyway, we went out to Wanboyne Station, and I think Doug McClellan, he was a senator eventually, I think he helped her arrange the divorce. He was a court reporter. Pretty hard in 1952, 53 for a lady to divorce her husband, particularly when he'd never done anything wrong.
Yeah, and then to provide herself a living.
Yeah, well, she worked out at Wanboyne Station. I'm not sure what she did exactly.
Now, when you say station, it was like a cattle station?
Sheep station, I think.
Sheep station. So is that one of your early memories?
Yep.
I mean, what age were you when that happened?
3 to 4. And I do remember little bits.
Yeah.
They had kids out there, and we once went out shooting at night in a Land Rover, you know, like I'm just watching. I remember that the cook one morning, he used to go into his room every Friday night and he'd get drunk and then come out, appear again sober on Monday morning, until one time he didn't.
And right.
They broke the door down and he was dead. Anyway, after that, we came back. Mum must have made the arrangements, and I was sent to a boarding school when I was 4, while she organised with the McClellans to get the divorce happening. And
so I would imagine a boarding school wouldn't be cheap, though.
So, I don't know how she managed to pay for that. I'm wondering whether the McClellans did, whether they helped her, because she certainly didn't get any help from her parents, and certainly not my father's parents. She's passed on now. I can't really find out. But she would never talk about her past because of the abuse. It totally affected her personality.
You say that with some confidence. What makes you say that?
Oh, well, I've seen her father in action. He
Right.
died in a fire. We nearly were with him. He was in his garage cleaning something with petrol, and he kicked us out of the garage. That's me and Mum's kid brother. And we went round the corner and up the hill, and a fire engine raced back past us. We went back down to see what had happened. Apparently, he'd lit a blowtorch. So we were
Wow.
only minutes away from being incinerated with him. That
Yeah.
was when I was six. No, but he was. But I saw his disciplinary technique, and there was no doubt in my mind that, what happened with my mother. But she would
Yeah.
just never, as soon as you raise a subject, she'd just freeze. Yeah. So that affected her personality. Yeah. So she was very guarded and cross-examined you on everything. So I had a quite a good moral upbringing, but it was atheist. She was dead set atheist. And I thought science had proved that there was no God and that we all evolved. My father believed that as well. My grandmothers weren't too sure. And they were sort of Easter Christmas churchgoers, they weren't keen on the clergy, but they did believe in a God. But we sort of tolerated that, it was okay for grandmas to do that.
Your background was Anglo-Saxon.
Yeah, theoretically, yeah. But I was getting into more and more trouble. They weren't, I guess they just sort of left me to my own devices. And I used to play with fire and things. We've tried to fire a bunga gun at the cow one time in the paddock and started a fire. And, the fire service had to go all day putting it out, spread for miles. My name was Mud then.
Yeah.
Eventually, I was getting into all sorts of trouble. Eventually, they sent me to another boarding school. But I should say, the first boarding school, I was there for a year. There was a lady there, I only knew her as Miss Joan. She was about 20. She lived with her parents. She was had a strong Christian faith, and she used to take me home on the weekends. And I reckon she had a profound influence on me.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Why do you say that? Like you, it sounds like you remember her sort of almost in the abstract. You know she had an influence. Can you be more specific?
Well, she taught us how to pray, put our hands
Okay.
together, and I used to think, oh, I can feel the blood going there, and that must be something happening, I was only four. But she was just a very loving, caring person where, I was lacking that from apart from my grandmother's.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So these things all came back to me, of course, in the end. And the lovely people were Christian believers
Yeah,
in
right.
God.
So you moved on from that boarding school to
Yeah.
another.
Yeah. Well, so that was the 4-year-old boarding school. And then we moved out to Rudy Hill, rough area. And of course, I was always a big kid and always quite good at schoolwork. And I was always a year ahead of all the other kids. I was the youngest in the class. But it meant that I kind of had to try and be top dog all the time. And when you go to Rudy Hill, there's some rough types out there. So that meant my behavior was getting pretty rough. And eventually the police brought me home and they said to Mum, you better do something, when I was about 10, 10 or 11. And so they sent me to a Roman Catholic boarding school in Katoomba.
And that was almost a deliberate attempt to bring give you some discipline.
Discipline, that was what it was all about, yeah, because at that I was a convinced atheist. I can remember sprouting evolution to my primary school teacher, lovely man. And I could see he was really uncomfortable about it. I was only about 9 or 10.
It's funny that you were so interested in whether evolution was true or not. I mean, a lot of 10-year-olds wouldn't give it a moment's thought.
Science, very interested in science. My dad was a technical person. He used to build
Right.
hi-fis. I was building radios and all sorts of stuff. And he told me about Isaac Newton, and I was a great fan of Newton and his third law of that every action results in an equal and opposite reaction. And yeah, so science. So I thought science had proved what it was all about.
So you're quite a thinking kid.
I guess so. I mean, everyone said, oh, yeah, he could do well if he just behave himself.
Did your mother struggle with discipline and everything because of her upbringing, do you think?
Possibly. I mean, occasionally she'd get stuck into me. The
Yeah.
stepfather, she remarried, you see. My stepfather always kept at a distance, which I suppose was a good thing. I think she had a lot of guilt and yeah. Anyway, it was a good thing, the boarding school. But again, there was another, a devout lay teacher up there who was kind and impressed me. Music teacher. I got involved in putting on plays and stuff like that, and singing in trial by jury and all those sorts of things. Did some Shakespearean acting. Yes.
How long? So you were there fairly young, 2 years.
Two years from age 11, 12 to 14. Yeah, 12 to 14. And then they closed. So, it was too early for me to start work. So they sent me to another boarding school, also in the Blue Mountains, this time an Anglican one, grammar school. And their beliefs were so wishy-washy. I just despised them, frankly. The headmaster, who was a reverend somebody or other, and I thought, these guys don't know what they believe. Whereas at least the Catholics had a definite dogma. In fact, I could say the first year I went to Catholic school, I came top of the catechism class
Right.
because I'd never heard any of this stuff.
I'm still fascinated that a 12, 13, 14-year-old is so interested in whether, someone has dogma or whether someone's views are wishy-washy, as you're described it. It's fascinating to think that as a 14-year-old, this is the way you're thinking.
Probably because I've sensed very early on, probably about the age 9, that I kind of didn't belong in either family, and I was sort of have to look after myself. And so that kind of gave me an outward view of the world.
You're very independent.
Yeah, had to be. Yeah. Yeah.
So you were then, like, you're 14 and you go to this Anglican
Yeah.
school.
Yeah, well, then I started getting into trouble again because the Catholics sorted me out a bit, but
Right, they kept you under control.
they were strict. But
Yeah.
yeah, the Anglicans, I told that he called me in one time, the headmaster, and said, why are you starting to misbehave? You had a good report from the other school. And I said, you're just not tough enough. And he lost it. He got his cane out. I got a cane on the backside, which was the normal thing. But it didn't change my views. I ran away from that place twice. I was brought home or caught by the cops the second time. No, the first time, caught by the cops. Spent the night in a cell with another Darrow. The duty officer would keep us awake all night banging a tin mug across the bars. So
Oh, yeah,
he
right,
must have
nice.
teached me a lesson, you know. Then I was back at boarding school. But yeah, eventually I ran away a second time and I said I wasn't going back. That's when I got a
So
job.
that was probably what, the age of 15 or 16 or
I was
something?
15, yeah.
15. And that was the end of schooling.
Yep. I'd got past my fourth year school certificate, and I said, that's it, I'm not going back. And there was plenty of work. The times
Okay.
are different. There was lots of work. So I got it.
So this is mid-60s.
Yeah, 65, yeah, late 65.
Yeah, so a time of growth in Australia, I guess.
Yeah, it was a boom. And I kind of was under the impression that everything was going to be booming and, we were going to. Things were going to go well.
So what sort of work did you get into initially?
Well, I was offered a couple of jobs. One was a technical one, working on electronic stuff with Angus and Coote. And the other one was with a photographer. And I think my father, stepfather and my mother thought the creative one was the photography was better. But really, probably Dad would have recommended the technical one. Anyway, so I worked for photographers. I mean, my stepfather was a photographer working with the CSIRO, so I knew I'd worked in dark rooms and process film and all that stuff.
Did you have any direction in life in terms of what, this is my career, where do I want to go,
No.
what do I want to do with my life?
No.
It, or is it more survival at this point?
The only real interest I had was rock and roll. The Beatles were big, and we thought we could do the same.
So how far did that go back? Did that go back to sort of
Yeah, well,
your
I met
in the Anglican school or?
even the Catholic school. There's a mate I met there, and we both learned how to play the guitar a bit, and we could sing. We used to sing with the school, but we also used to sing rock and roll and stuff. So, yeah, we thought we'd form a band, and there was no shortage of other people who wanted to do the same, and we thought it'd be easy. We can do that. I didn't realize all the other stuff that goes on behind the scenes. Because, when I got the job, sort of saving up to buy a guitar and all this sort of stuff, things were expensive back then. Guitars and amplifiers are very expensive. But eventually, oh, my mate, because the school had closed, he'd gone to Power College in Sydney, and he'd met this older guy, 20, 21 guy, who was going to be a manager, and he was really pushy, and he said, we'll be famous and all this. So he said, oh, we'll go along with it.
So you're just like 16 at this point, are you? Or a
Yep,
little bit older by
16,
now?
16,
16.
yep. Left home. Yeah,
Oh, it's pretty young to be doing this sort of stuff.
yeah.
Well, it seems that now, anyway, put it that way.
Yeah, but I was always about a year ahead of my age. So the manager turned out to be a crook anyway. At one point, when the band wasn't doing anything, he sent thugs around to raid where we were staying and pinched all my gear. I mean, my.
Were you making any money from music?
Not at that stage, no. Dad had made me the amplifier and I'd made the speaker box. And yeah, anyway, they pinched all that stuff, but we got it back eventually. But yeah, that was a bit of a lesson. Yeah, also met my wife at the same time. It was all happening. Yeah.
So you're quite young.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, met my wife at 15 and we're still together. So. It's about how many years?
So your
57.
passion presumably was music,
Yep.
but you were doing photography to pay the bills.
Photography was the job. Yep. But then then I joined another band and we actually were getting work. Those guys were from rich families and they must have been on uni holiday or something. I don't know. So we got lots of uni gigs and other gigs all around the place. And so, yeah, we made a little bit of money. So there was a time when I actually chucked in my job because I had enough to live on. But
So what were you doing in the band? Are you playing guitar?
singing bass player. Yeah.
Right.
Like, and I was kind of the front man.
Sort of Paul McCartney.
Yeah. Yeah. But we only ever did covers, weren't writing our own stuff or anything. But
And you're
we're
still in
getting
Sydney
work.
at this point.
Yeah, in Sydney, yeah. But sometimes we'd travel down to Wollongong or out west. I can't think of the places. The older guy, the guitarist, he was a builder. His father had a building business and he had his own car with a trailer, covered trailer, and that's how he used to cart the gear around. So, yeah. Any rate, well, then at a certain point, my girlfriend and I got pregnant. So
So that's a life-changing
that
event.
changed everything. Yeah. So it's funny, because some people say, oh, that's a bit of a worry. But I actually felt like I was promoted. So I was only 19. And so, yeah, we got married. I
So
said,
what do you mean by that? You felt like you were promoted.
well, I'm becoming a father.
Right.
Pretty good. So, yeah, I sold my
Do you think
gear
that
and
gave you some meaning that you were lacking at the time? Something like
probably,
that?
yeah, and I wanted to be a good father, probably be the
Right.
father that I never had or missed out on having.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we then I sold all my gear to buy a wedding ring, got a decent job. We were living in a place in Cremorne, a big house, and we sublet to my wife's brother and a few others. Now he was into bands as well.
So were you still, you said you sold all your gear, were you still playing music?
Only just at home with
Right.
just an acoustic guitar. I gave
Yep.
it away.
Right.
I mean, I had a big hi-fi. It was, the envy of lots of people because again, hi-fi was still in its early days, and people didn't have these hi-fi earbuds and stuff, and could get FM. It just wasn't like that.
Amazing how much things have, how many things have changed in your lifetime, isn't
Tech
it?
changes really quickly, really quickly. So people used to come around to hear our hi-fi system, and we were just sort of cool dudes, hippies, I suppose. There was a bit of marijuana smoked. My wife's brother, he got his band started to become successful. It was called Fraternity. And they moved down to Adelaide. Meanwhile, I'd gone into partnership with Art and Design Mob. I was their photographer and had a set up a photo lab in the building. I got some money from a grandmother. She passed away and left me a little bit of money. So that was all going fine. But then, I don't know, just things went downhill. Some of our associates were getting arrested for drug dealing. We weren't dealing, but some of the people we knew were. We had some pretty feral people staying with us at different times because we were subletting. We were relying on extra money for the rent. And then my partners, because I was the junior partner, they started to get pushy. One of them wanted me to work over Christmas, which I wanted to spend with. Now we had two kids actually by this time. So this is would be what, 73?
Okay, so you've got kids now.
Well, that's
So
right.
you've got one when you were, how old were you when you had your first?
Well, it's 20 when he was born.
20, and then you've got another one now. Okay.
So by 72, I've got a girl now, a boy and girl. So by about 73, and he wants me to work over the Christmas holidays because it suits one of his clients. The factory's closed or something. And I want to be with my kids and my wife. So, because, not so much to me, but to the wife and the kids, Christmas was a big thing. You celebrated with your family. So I refused, and I think this guy is not very nice. He's a bit like the manager we had. He's only interested in the money. So that and a few other things. So we decided to look for another lifestyle, and we thought we'd move to Adelaide because my wife's brother and the band fraternity were down there.
All right. Maybe just at this point, your wife, Diana, what did she bring into your life? Like, what was her background? And did she change the way you looked at life? And
Well, she
because
was.
I'm interested, particularly with your view on family life and so on, given that you didn't have one.
Well, she was very strong on family life, I could say. She was a very compliant, friendly girl. She totally, I think, the fact that she was so different from her mother probably was the initial appeal. Often you find that with couples that they'll marry someone who is or is not like one of their parents because of the experience they've had with them. But yeah, she was very agreeable. Good mum.
So moving to Adelaide then, that's a big move for a young family.
It's amazing. But we just sort of made a choice. I suppose the fact that her brother was down here meant she felt safer about it. And I thought, oh, well, I'll cash in the partnership, get some of my money back, and we'll go down and buy some land. And maybe we'll grow our own dope, and then we won't have to pay for
That's a high ideal.
it. So anyway, we sort of did all that, but it was a bit of a shock coming to Adelaide. Yeah, quite a shock.
In what way?
Well, we looked like hippies, and in Sydney you could sort of fit in, but down here everyone looked at us weirdly. We were staying at a holiday flat at West Beach initially, and I mean, for example, I walked into the post office one time. I don't know, it was down at West Beach, a post office and shops, I think a supermarket. And the guy behind the counter, he just decided he didn't like the look of me and just started to tell me what he thought of me in front of everyone.
Right.
I couldn't believe it. But
Well, it's an interesting insight into Adelaide back in the mid-60s, wasn't it? I mean, it was always called the City of Churches, so it seems as though it was just so much more formal than Sydney, perhaps,
It
or less
was.
progressive,
Yeah,
depending on how you want to look at it.
but it was friendly. You'd walk down the street and people would smile and say hello, and you think that's weird. That
Right.
doesn't happen in Sydney. It probably doesn't happen now, I don't know, but where was I? Oh yeah, so we found a place out in the country, about 40 k's out from the city, and it was a stone cottage on the banks of the Torrens River, a couple of acres. Thought, yeah, this is what we want. It was only 16,000, which was a pretty good price, I suppose. Prices, of course, are different now. But the bank manager took one look at me and he thought, no, this is dodgy. So he undervalued the property and we couldn't afford to get bridging finance. And so that was the end of that. And then the following year, I get a bill from the ATO and I realise the guys in Sydney have diddled the book somehow to get me to pay tax.
All
And
right.
so basically I was left without any cash. So
Well, how did you respond to that? Because that could leave you very angry and bitter.
again, I just take these things in my stride. I just sort of think, oh, okay, so now we're locked into this fraternity thing, because these guys wanted to make the big time. They'd won the Hoadley's Battle of the Sounds, and I mean, you might
Okay,
call
so they're half decent.
you could say that. It's
I'm
not
being generous.
always about the talent, you realize, Stephen. It's about who you know and what you're prepared to do to get there.
Right.
And some behaviour has been very unethical. I've seen a bit. So one of their members was Bon Scott. I don't know if you've heard of him. He joined
I do.
ACDC in the end.
Well, in fact, I live at Surry Hills, and just around the corner here, I've got the Kirk Church, was where they filmed their first
Okay,
video.
right. Okay, well, Bon was singing for fraternity initially. And
Okay.
we knew the guys. And but it was sort of they came back from England and reshuffled, and a couple of the members left, and you know, had to get new members. Anyway, they wanted me to be their sound man because, you know, I knew about audio and speakers and all that sort of stuff. So I said, oh, okay, I guess we'll do that. So that's was going to be the next goal, working in with fraternity. So we got another, we hired a bigger house and all moved in together. And that just went downhill.
What was that lifestyle like?
I'd go to work. I was about the only person there with a full-time day job. And you know, I'd come home and the place would be full of all sorts of odd people. You know, some would be nice and some would be darrows, it'd be junkies, there'd be all sorts, crooks, guys with guns, you know, everything.
So is your family, and you've got two
Yeah,
children at this point, they're
well,
all part of this.
let me tell you one more thing. When we lobbed in Adelaide, we found we were pregnant again.
Right, so number three.
Yeah, so by this time we got three kids. Yeah, so you know, it was obviously. I had a day job. I'm trying to be their sound man. That meant I'm going to a recording studios over the weekend to learn techniques, mixing and stuff. And my wife and the three kids are just at home with all this riffraff. So yeah, it went downhill. And eventually, I don't know, I'll leave a few things out, but a lot of bad behavior. Another guy you might have heard of is Jimmy Barnes. He sang for us for a while.
Yeah, so Salisbury, Adelaide guy.
Yeah, he was arguing with Cole Chisel all the time. Bon Scott left to join ACDC because it was taking too long. And so Barnes joined for a bit, you know, and a lot of these guys are womanizers, but they're not that fussy about whether women are married or not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's just no morality there. And, you know, without me being conscious, I had been raised with a moral upbringing, and even though there was no reason for it. No God.
Right, no foundation for
Yeah,
what you
why
actually thought
should you
was
be
wrong or
moral?
right.
Yeah,
Yeah,
totally.
yep.
So, yeah, virtually everything around me was falling apart, and I ended up with this. I was coughing and having dizzy spells and having headaches and stiff neck. And one of the friends of the band was a GP. I mean, he said had some issues, moral issues as well. But he diagnosed me as having meningitis, a viral meningitis. So,
That's very serious.
yeah, I was sent to hospital. So I think, oh, did I mention the drug squad raided us?
I'm not surprised given what you've said.
So fortunately, there wasn't anything much at the house at the time, but my wife and two kids were home. One was at school by now. So that kind of was the turning point for me. Well, that began the turning point, but when I got sick and ended up in hospital, and I'm thinking, boy, this is just not working.
Right.
And there's a guy next to me, he's about, I don't know, 40, 50 years older than me, and we're talking, and I'm thinking, I have to give up smoking and drinking now. And I'm talking to him, and he says, yeah, I better give up smoking and drinking now. And I'm thinking, what? You haven't done it yet, you know, and you're 50 years older than me.
Right.
So I thought, if I get out here, I'm going to change. And so that put me on my search for a better way of life, how to be.
So you did change. You actually, a lot of people in hospital say that. Not many actually then
Right.
follow through, I imagine.
Right. Well, it depends what you go back to, I suppose, because I'm going back to this feral household. So I start taking the kids to get books. We buy some kids' books. I'm starting to try and take interest in the kids, but also get some health books. And some of the health books are kind of, there's a background of religion in them, like, you know, that we're designed to do this and not do this, and they sort of include moral principles like being honest and telling the truth and all this sort of stuff. And I'm sort of thinking, you know, not consciously, but I realize that my grandmothers and some of my backgrounds got this in there. And anyway, I'm chatting to the guitarist, and he says, "Oh, my brother's talking to the JWs, and they've given him this book about evolution and creation. You want to have a look?" And I thought, "Oh, probably not much in it." Anyway, it blew me away because they logically demolished evolution. If you can believe evolution, why can't you believe creation? Because it's a lot harder to believe that things just come by accident. They said if you find a watch on the beach and it's even if it's not ticking, you think it just got popped into existence by itself. And then the next page is, you know how complicated the simplest living cell is? Darwin used to reckon, and I knew all about Darwin. You know, you mix a few chemicals together, get a blob of jelly, it's like a cell, it grows, and then you join a few more together. Then I'd give it enough time and you get living creatures, you know. It's if you can believe that, you can believe anything.
And we know the cells are far more complicated than what we knew back in the
Yeah,
60s and 70s.
way, way more complicated. So that got me really thinking. So I don't know how long it took, but I decided I better get a Bible. I'll just have a look at this Bible because they kept talking about the Bible. And
And so up to now, you're at the Roman Catholic boarding school when you were very young.
never saw a Bible.
Right. So this is new for you.
Totally new. The Anglicans might have had a formal reading on a once a week, but I never took any notice. So yeah, I've never read a Bible, never seen one. So, and I, you know, I've got three kids and a wife, and not a very high pay. So anyway, I go into the Bible bookshop and in town. And secretly, surreptitiously, and she says, "What version would you like, sir?" I said, "I don't want any silly versions. Just give me the original." And so I
Right.
got a paperback King James for $2.
Well done.
So I took it home, and I opened the page. Now I had done Shakespearean acting, right? So at least I was familiar a bit with that kind of language.
Yeah, so you could actually read it.
Yeah,
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you know, someone like my wife that's just gobbledygook couldn't understand
Right.
a word. So I open it up, first page, first verse, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Right, you got my attention. And
Yeah,
so I
right.
just never put it down. And I can remember saying to my wife after a few weeks, if I decide this book's true, there's going to be big changes around here. And she was a bit apprehensive about that.
I'll bet.
But then sometime around then, the boss gets this junk mail on on his desk at work, and I'm in there at lunchtime. I'm going to say I'm just going to lunch, and there's this newspaper on the desk saying, "Great news for the world: no more death." And of course, it's a photo of someone being wheeled down a hospital corridor, and I can straight away relate to that.
Yeah, right. So this is, we're talking just a few short time, a little
A
time
month or
after being
two,
in
6
hospital.
weeks. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's amazing how much you do when you're that age. I mean, I'm 27. Yeah. So I said, "Yeah, actually, I'm interested in that." He was surprised. It's the first time I'd ever said that to anybody. And I took it out and read it. And of course, there's stuff in there which I've been reading the Bible now, the first part of the Old Testament, and they're talking about stuff in there. Yeah, okay. So I sent in the coupon. But I've also contacted the JWs, and I'm talking to anybody who'll talk about Bible, and you know, so I'm talking to Mormons and SDAs and
So you say you're talking to them. Do you think, what are you doing talking to them? You're trying to discover, you're trying to learn, you're trying to work out what's true, what's not.
yeah, exactly, trying to find out the truth,
Right.
exactly, trying to find out the truth. And
Were you skeptical?
I think I become convinced that there was a God and the Bible was his book. But
Right. But you then had to work out, well, what is it?
yeah,
What's the
I
truth?
realize there's all these other organizations, and I know the Catholics haven't got the truth. It's
Right.
a whole lot of mumbo jumbo. And there's so much corruption there. I didn't tell you about the time I went to confession at boarding school. I didn't know what it was. And I met this kid on the train going up. He says, "You coming to confession?" I don't want to let on that I don't know. I say, "Oh, all right." So we're sitting there in the chapel, you know, on the line, one by one disappearing into the room. By the time I get in there, I'm 11, I'm shaking. He thinks I've done something really juicy, you know? So he starts making suggestions. So, you know, by the time I can't say a word, by the time I leave there, I know more about him than he knows about me. You know, he says, "Oh, go and say Hail Marys and whatever and come back next week." And of course, I don't do that. So, anyway, so I knew the Catholics didn't have the truth. The Anglicans, they'll just anything will matter. They don't care. Anything will do. So, yeah, I wanted to find out what was the truth. If the Bible was God's message to mankind, then what was the right understanding of it? And that's kind of, you know, drew me closer and closer to the Christadelphians. Eventually, I got a couple come around and visit me.
Just going back to that, the coupon that you filled out with
Yep.
death will be done away with, what was that?
Well, it was on the back of that newspaper, and it was just for more
Yeah.
information or something.
Right. And who was sponsoring that? Who was
Adelaide Ecclesia.
the Adelaide
Yep.
Christadelphian
Yep.
Ecclesia?
Adelaide Ecclesia. And it was a good thing that I did approach the Adelaide Ecclesia because, you know, I still look like a hippie. And some of the other, like the meeting I'm at now, back in those days, they probably would have kicked me out the door. But, you know, I can understand that the gap
There's a bit of a
be
lesson there, isn't
too
there?
big. Oh, well, you know, I've found lots of lessons in the community since I've joined. But yeah, I mean, just for your information, I did go on to become the recorder, an AB, a marrying brother. About 20 years, I did all that sort of stuff.
In the Adelaide Ecclesia.
No, we formed the Hyde Park meeting.
Oh, okay.
It was
Yep.
Fullerton and it was Hyde Park.
So at this point, though, you haven't quite got there. So you're talking to Mormons, JWs, and then the Christadelphians appear on the scene. How
And
did that go down?
well, it was good because eventually a couple of them would come round probably once a week or something and sit in the kitchen and talk to me. And of course, I was having big problems. I was on my own by that time, nobody else in the house, so they all thought I was nuts. And my wife's very challenged because her brother's there and he's told her I'm off the air.
Right.
So she doesn't know what to, she's traumatized, really. So I'm talking to these guys and they kind of, because I'm still in the Old Testament. I don't know anything about Christ. I'm drawn to the Creator God, my father, you know, because I've never had a father. And this father's saying he wants to be my father and he's the father to the fatherless. And I'm thinking, you know, that's me.
So this resonates.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, they draw me to some of the Apostle Paul's writings about marriage and that. And I think, wow, oh, that's a big help. So that sort of helped me to make peace with my wife. And over time, I won her over because I started doing stuff around the house, washing the dishes and yeah, just
Yeah,
generally.
so it's not just an academic exercise for you. It's starting to change the way you think about and the way you behave.
And raising the kids. And I tell you what, the kids, the way we used to raise them was just whatever happened, happened. If I was in a bad mood, then look out. And if I was in a good mood, they'd get away with anything. Well, I started having rules and structure and rewards and punishment. Well, you know what? The kids absolutely loved that. I was blown away. I couldn't believe how much they liked it. They'd come to me and say, "What do we do now, Dad?" Oh, and you know, so and so did this, and you know, you said do that. And so they actually really liked the order that came about from it all, which I suppose I'd had a background in the boarding schools. So that's where I got a bit of experience with that. But, So there, the kids were liking it, and then they wanted to get mum on side, and mum could see I was behaving better.
So you sort of started spending more time with Christadelphians and learning less time with Mormons and JWs,
Yeah, well,
etc.
I soon gave up on the Mormons and the SDAs. Their main religion is fear of the supernatural devil monster, you know, whenever they go. But I mean, the JW is the same.
Well, that would have been pretty ingrained is maybe not the right word, I'm not sure, but the devil would have been fundamental to both the Anglican and Roman Catholic views.
Absolutely. And to me,
Did
that was just
you
mumbo jumbo.
struggle with that?
No, mumbo jumbo.
Right. So you struggle with that in that you're already questioning the whole devil thing and
Yeah, absolutely. I knew what the problem of the world was. It's people. It's how people behave. You know, you can't trust them. They're not reliable. So, yeah, no, I never believed that. And I'm reading the Bible and there's nothing about it in there. Nothing.
especially the Old Testament.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm quite clear. And the Old Testament's the foundation. If you don't understand the Old Testament, forget about reading the New. In fact, it's interesting. My wife, she had an uncle. He was a member of a Brotherhood of St. Lawrence, a celibate priest, been there all his life. And he visited us one time, not long after this. I don't know if she was baptized, but I was. And I said, "Do you want to do the readings with us?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, all right." And he said, "Well, you're still reading the Old Testament."
Right.
And this guy's a, high priest, devoted his life to it. So, yeah. No, it's definitely based on faith in God, the Father, the Creator. Yeah.
So during that 2 year period before you were baptized, what sort of things were you doing, and what was meaningful to you, and what kept you coming along?
Well, I fronted up outside the Adelaide Hall one Sunday morning, and everyone looked at me strangely because I looked odd to them, to check them out. And I might have, I don't know, said a few things. Somebody said, "Why don't you come to a public lecture?" So I probably started doing that. And the chairman would say, "If you've got any questions after the meeting, just ask one of the members." And I'd think, "How do I know who's a member here?" Of course, I'm the only one that's not, probably.
Right, anyone that doesn't look like you, probably.
So yeah, I started going to things, and they'd have special efforts, and then somebody said, "Why don't you bring the kids to Sunday school?" And so I said, "Oh, all right." So I'd bring them there, and I'd wait outside. Oh, first of all, I went in, but after a while, I just wait outside in the car. And then they said, "Why don't you come to the Sunday meeting?" So then I'd have to race them home to be with my wife, but eventually she agreed to come. But I think the thing was they were very friendly and loving and kind and understanding. Especially that was important for my wife to win her over. There were some lovely sisters there that really made her feel comforted, and I think that was crucial.
Right.
So, and I've been to a few different meetings over the time, not membership, but just visited. And some meetings are remarkable for their loving, welcoming attitude, and some for exactly the opposite. It's like you're invisible.
So you reached a point where you felt compelled to be baptized.
Yeah, I said to, I can mention Brother Ian Dangerfield, can I? Do you know Ian?
Yeah, I do.
I said, "I think I should be baptized." And it's funny, the two brethren, it was Ian and Clive Wilson, they said, "Oh, well, now just hang on. You realize there's got to be a complete change of lifestyle." I think, "You guys don't know what you're talking about." My lifestyle changed so much that nobody of my old life wants to talk to me anymore. Because
Yeah.
for a while I thought I might actually bring others in, one or two, but nobody was interested.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, isn't it? So you're with this huge group of people, all who are probably pretty similar to you, and yet you're unique in this interest.
Yeah, what's got to do with your upbringing, isn't it? Your background.
Many are called and few are chosen as well, I suppose.
And oh, one more thing I could mention. I found out Isaac Newton was a devout Christian, and he'd actually written more on Bible topics than on science. But
Yeah, for sure.
the family had kept that quiet.
Probably not many people know that in
No,
reality, but
because he
yeah.
was not only he was a nonconformist, a Protestant nonconformist. I think, you know what? He's probably the same as us.
Yeah, very similar. So early, you're baptized. At early days, your wife's not baptized, but
She's coming along to the meeting,
she's
and
coming along, she's feeling welcome.
everyone's friendly.
I imagine coming into a community like the Christadelphians, it'd be almost like a honeymoon period where everything would be going pretty well. But of course, what was some of the positives, perhaps we could say? Like what? I mean, you've probably already mentioned some of them, the way you were welcomed in Sunday school and family life, I guess. What else? Community?
Yeah, I guess so. We'd go to ecclesial lunches and ecclesial camps. Yeah, it was a whole alternative life to what we had and which I'd left. So it filled that gap because there wasn't anything. Eventually, the house we're in, everyone moved out.
So you've given up on music by this point, pretty
Totally.
much.
Yeah, totally.
Yep.
And yeah, that was like a religion, but yeah, I totally gave up on it.
And you've never picked it back up again subsequently?
Well, It's interesting, but I don't really want to go there. But there were certain
I'm
members,
happy for you to go
there
there.
were certain members of the community that were really interested in the rock and roll and the music. And it's amazing how many of those drifted away from the truth, the ones that were really interested. And not all of them, but I was encouraged over time, probably 10 years later, to pick up the guitar, and we did sang some gospel songs and stuff. But yeah, I was always a bit uneasy about it. Because you've got, this tension always in the meeting, because there's those on the inside that don't know what it's like on the outside, and they want to know. And
Yeah, you come from such different places, don't you?
yep, totally.
Early days in the community, what did you learn? Like, and I'm thinking, how could the community did some things really well. They probably did things not so well. What were some of the learnings that you can
It's a
share?
good question, Stephen. I haven't thought about this one. Apart from the doctrines of the truth,
Which is the most important thing, I guess.
absolutely.
Or it was for you anyway.
Yeah, I mean, there are people that remind me of my grandmothers. Loving, caring, genuinely concerned people. So that's where the majority of those people tend to be. I don't know what else I can say.
And so it seems like Diana's path was different to yours. Yours was, well, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but probably very academically driven. Whereas hers slightly different, more sort of family, and you mentioned that she felt welcome and so on. So let's
Behavior.
reflect on that a little bit. What was her path then? You're baptized. What was happening with her?
Well, I think she could just see that life was a lot better than it had been. Yeah.
So at some point she says, I need to look into it for myself.
She did, she did. Yeah, it was 4 years after me. But yeah, took time. But yeah, she didn't have that sudden revelation like me. But yeah, her parents were kind of nominally Christian, or skeptical. So nicely behaved, but no real conviction. Whereas my upbringing was ardent atheism, zealous atheists. I would discuss, atheism with anyone who wanted to, and preach the gospel of evolution. I mean, that's
Yeah,
what's
right.
really blown me away, how evolution can get into our meeting, in the Christadelphia meeting. I mean, atheist evolutionists just think that's laughable, because that's the whole reason that they've got evolution. And it doesn't agree with the scripture. God doesn't make things by trial and error, and where are all the in-between types in the fossil record? They're not there. Yeah, I mean, that was another community. One of the brothers that Adelaide put me onto was the creation science mob, and I got the book, The Genesis Flood, and that I love that book. I mean, it's not perfect, but the fossil record being explained largely by the Noachic deluge, is I find that a pretty satisfactory explanation.
Yeah. Well, time's moved on, and you've been in the community a long time, and also you've had a working career. Where did you get up to in your life subsequent to that, in terms of what work did you do and so on?
Okay, well, I was working for photographers down here. At a certain point, actually, I got the sack because of my faith.
Oh,
Because,
really?
not they didn't say it that way, but we had one of our clients was Girard Industries Clipsal, and they used to do a calendar every year for the tradies, and it was always, a bit half similarly clad. And I just said, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. And
Oh, so they wanted you to do.
they
Oh,
would,
okay, I'm with you. So you're the
Well,
photographer.
I didn't
Okay.
always, the guy who normally did it wasn't available. And
Right.
I was, because we did all their other stuff, the product. I said, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. And so that didn't go down well. There was another issue. I'm just trying to think what it was. Any rate, and of course, the economy was going down a bit by this. So they put on another guy, a younger guy, with the view, I think, to replacing me. Much to his annoyance, the younger guy turned out to be just converted to Pentecostalism. So we had intense discussions about the truth of the scriptures and what they're actually saying. Anyway, but he did, he retrenched me, and he was a bad-tempered man. And so I was out of work, but I had nearly 10 years long service. So I've been working, been in Adelaide nearly 10 years. And just about when the long service pay ran out, I got a job with a photo lab. And it blew me away. I found out that that very week that I got the job with the photo lab, the pig-headed guy in the place where I used to work dropped dead from a heart attack. He was watching Monty Python on TV and he started
It
laughing.
was too much for him.
And I thought, wow,
That sounds like a Monty Python skit in
that's
itself.
awesome. Anyway, so I was working with this photo lab. We did Cibachrome, which was the epitome of the best photographs you could get at one time. And we were working for Ken Duncan and Peter Lick and all these
Yeah,
names.
right. So you remain in that industry.
Well, that's what I knew. And I mean, I always believed if you're going to do your job, you've got to do it well. And I was always well regarded by the bosses until I wouldn't do the calendar, of course. but yeah, the new boss, he was a Dutchman. So he was very glad to have me, and I was there for 20 years or something.
Right, and you're retired now.
Yeah, I'm retired. I spent my last 5 years as the pastoral carer at Beth Salem Aged Care. something happened. Oh, the job, that's right, the boss, the owner. Yeah, he died of a heart attack as well. and I managed the business for a while, but by that time, photography was being totally replaced by digital.
Yeah.
So it was around about 2010, I think.
And what's the role of the pastoral care
Oh, you
at
organize activities, you do the
right?
Bible readings, you go and talk to people, counsel them if they need support, encouragement, talk to families, oh, and do funerals. I've done well over 100 funerals.
Wow, that's significant. Well, when we were talking, you mentioned to me that over the past few years you'd thought of sort of writing down your life, and you actually quoted a psalm, which I thought was quite interesting. It's Psalm 90, verse 12. It's a prayer of Moses, which says, "Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom." What made you quote that? What resonates there for that for
Well, I
you?
started writing my life story, I don't know, a few years ago, and I'm thinking, why am I doing this? I'm thinking the kids, yeah, maybe it's the kids, but kids not always that interested. And then I suddenly realized I was doing it for myself so that I could process everything. And then I saw that verse in the Psalm 90. I thought, yep, that's exactly what's happening. Because it's not just numbering how many, counting them, it's evaluating them, your days. And you learn from it.
When you look back over these years and think about where you were, where you've come from, your life lessons, what's a reflection or what's a message you could share to maybe young men, young women that are going through that stage now, young mothers and fathers? What's important?
I think God is working with you. He's willing to work with you. Even just as we're just little pieces in this huge creation, just specks in time, but God is infinitely awesome and he can work with you. And I can see that he's been working with me all that time, even though I had no idea about it. When I was about four, I remember asking Mum about God because of Miss Joan, the lovely teacher. And she said, oh, it's basically just like Santa Claus, people just want to believe that. And a bit later on, when I was getting into trouble, she got my grandmother to talk to me. And grandma said, what about God? And I said, oh, that's just a crutch for people who can't face life on their own. So, I was convinced that there was no God. But yet, all of that time, God must have been directing me to different places. It's quite humbling to think of that. It's just amazing.
Peter, thanks very much for joining Wilderness Conversations.
I hope it's helpful to somebody, Stephen.